If you listen a lot to public radio in the U.S., you've probably enjoyed a few driveway moments listening to Jake Warga's documentaries and radio portraits from unusual places. In recent years, that includes being embedded with the military stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Jake's been back there several times to document everyday life for soldiers. Things like what Christmas feels like in a war zone and the comforts of home that the military tries to offer as a morale booster. Jake's with us right now to share more about his assignments and getting to know the troops overseas. Jake, thanks for being with us on Travel with Rick Steves.
Well, thanks for having me, Rick.
So, Jake, you went to be a reporter in Iraq. How do you do that?
The internet provides all the information you need. And it was back in 2009, and I decided I wanted to go to Iraq for Christmas. Because okay. Why not?
Okay.
Yeah, Christmas in Iraq.
Never thought about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I went online and applied for an embed slot, which turned out to be extremely easy. Though I am a freelance radio producer, I do work for different organizations now and then. And so with hearingvoices.com, which is a public radio outlet, I went to Iraq. But the military is a little vague in basically the instructions that they give you. They say, all right, bring a bulletproof vest, a sleeping bag, a helmet, and just show up in Kuwait.
Check, check, check. So you pack. I mean, we all travel and pack. And on your checking list, bulletproof vest. Where do you get a bulletproof vest?
Again, the internet. Bulletproofme.com.
Bulletproofme.com. Yeah. Okay, so you covered all of that. I never even thought about this, but you're a freelance reporter. A station isn't sending you there. You're not going with 60 Minutes or something like that. You just want to get some material. You take it upon yourself. You go to the web. You let the American Army know you want to have this experience, and they accommodate you.
Early wars used to be chemical. Then they became atomic. And now they're sort of information wars that we're engaged in.
So that serves their needs, in other words.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so how do you get there? Where'd you fly, and then what happened?
Well, I was in Dubai working, doing photography project for the tourism bureau. And so it was a very easy flight to hop over to Kuwait. So I did. And I show up at the airport, but I thought it'd be really obvious. Now, I've never done this before. I know nothing of the military culture. And I thought there'd be guys in uniforms going around that I could just sort of ask questions of. But I show up there and it's just like any airport in the world, any international airport, except everyone's smoking.
Right. So you're looking for somebody to tell you where to go to, how to get to Baghdad.
Yeah. So I'm looking for someone to tell me, okay, where do I go? How does this work? And you can always recognize a soldier by their boots. So over at the Starbucks, I see some guys hanging around. They're obviously Western guys.
Big boots.
Yep. With civilian clothing. And I go up and say, you're a U.S. soldier, right? They said, yeah. I said, where do we go?
You don't look like you'd fit in the military environment. It must have been kind of comical.
It was. And I kept a little notebook, and this is where I started to learn about acronyms.
All right.
Because just like, you know, travel to any foreign country, the goal is to connect to the people, right? To understand the culture. And though I spoke the language, there were some key words I was missing, and a lot of those involved acronyms. So the PAO officer, which is the public affairs officer, basically instructed me to show up in Kuwait. So I show up in Kuwait. Mm-hmm. And these soldiers basically saying, oh, just hang out. Someone will come for us. I mean, can you feel the stress of war here? No. So I order an espresso. And eventually this young girl comes over, old enough to be my daughter. And she's wearing civilian clothes. She's obviously American with some lanyard. And she says, comes up to me very officially, are you trying to get to Ali Asalim Air Base? And I said, yes. She says, okay, wait over by the Cinnabon and we'll be there at 1400. And she looks at me, 2 o'clock. So that was my start
of
war.
Okay, go to Cinnabon and it's at 2 o'clock. And then you got to get to, so you're trying to get to Baghdad.
Yeah. And so basically, from the Kuwait International Airport, I have to get to the American Air Base, which is right next to the Kuwait Airport. But oh my gosh, they love to make these complicated. Mm-hmm. So we begin a convoy to go to that base. And then I wait for a couple days and eventually get a flight on a C-130, one of those enormous cargo planes, to go basically just a couple of hours over to Baghdad. And I show up in Baghdad. And at Saddam Hussein's mother-in-law's house is the public affairs building, where they give me my identification, and then I finally get to take a shower, which I really enjoyed, and then basically I'm off to northern Iraq on a Black Hawk.
They got you into Baghdad, and they took your personal information to kind of register you?
Yeah, I did the biometrics. So yeah. They took my eye exam. Yes, my teeth. I was like, oh my gosh.
Your teeth?
Yeah. Why do you need that?
You mean in case you got burned up and there was just teeth left?
I didn't want to think that, but I think so, yeah.
That's
or if I broke into somewhere and took a bite of cheese, they know who it was.
I doubt
it's probably
that.
The former.
I think the former.
Yeah.
That's right there, a little bit chilling. Okay, So they got your dental records in case the rest of your body is unrecognizable.
Right.
And now you're really in the Army.
Now I'm in it. But first, I stopped by the souvenir shop.
There's a souvenir shop at Saddam Hussein mother-in-law's
next
place?
To it.
Next door, okay.
Yeah, there's. I guess if we were to write a travel guide to going to war zones, the shopping would be great. I mean, the souvenir shops.
So you are now embedded. Is there a group of other reporters that you're kind of like all trundled along with?
No, it was weird. There's very little reporting going on, embedded reporting at the time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to experience Christmas with the troops and understand what that was like. And also I was doing a story where I heard a lot about Iraq in the news, about what was going on, but this was top-down news. These were press releases. These were headlines. I'm more of a bottom-up guy.
So you're trying to find out what's it like to be under that helmet.
Yeah, the tree for the forest approach, where I talk to individual soldiers to try to understand what's going on, not to the top brass.
Right, yeah.
Because there is a big gap
in
what is actually going on and what. So as far as finger on the pulse goes, I figure that would be with the infantry and with the Army. And so I spent time in different bases, and I could just hop on a Black Hawk and go to some other base and call ahead to the PAO. Pop quiz, what's PAO?
Oh, you told me earlier.
Public Affairs Officer.
Okay.
I kept a little notebook because it's just like traveling to any country. You know,
it's like practical phrases, but these are all acronyms.
You'll need a phrase book for the military, and it's going to be all acronyms.
Wow.
And PAO is Public Affairs Officer, and where you get your food is called the DFAC.
Why?
Dining Facility.
Oh, of course.
And that's not even an acronym. That's an abbreviation.
And you don't need MREs in DFAC.
Oh, my gosh. The food is incredible. And talking to a lot of soldiers, especially ones who are in multiple deployments or reservists, they struggle to keep their weight down.
This is the sense I get, that we've gone to great lengths to create a wonderful environment for people before they go through that wall and get out in the real world, the real war zone.
Mm-hmm.
Within the base, it's comfortable.
Yeah, I'm pretty much every base.
Air conditioned, Starbucks, McDonald's, fancy restaurants.
Well, Starbucks didn't get the contract. There's green beans, which is which I love green beans. And it's basically the Starbucks on bases. So that's where I spent most of my money and time, actually, in green beans. And that's the other thing that I learned in the military, that bravery is momentary, but a true measure of a soldier, I think Napoleon was mentioning this, is patience.
Jake Warga is a freelance journalist in public radio, and he's our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Jake has spent time embedded with U.S. troops stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan, documenting day-to-day life in a war zone. You can listen to samples of his radio productions and see photos from his assignments on his website. That's jakewarga.com, spelled W-A-R-G-A. In World War II, we occupied Hitler's palaces, our military did. And of course, after Iraq, we occupied Saddam Hussein's palaces. Did you get into his palaces and actually see some of those?
Saddam Hussein in Tikrit, Iraq, is his birthday palace, Mahmud Palace. And I spent many days there. It was a joint command center with the Iraqis. But yeah, let's just say we're occupying this gorgeous palace. And the famous shot of Saddam Hussein firing off his golden gun was from this palace.
Wow.
And it was constructed so that during his birthdays, parades would go by. So when the army occupies places, they set up little berths and beddings. And so every soldier has their own private sort of plywood cubicle to sleep in.
Okay.
And press are sort of considered visiting dignitaries. So I had the nicer cubicle, wooden cubicle. And I woke up in the morning looking at these golden chandeliers, actual golden chandeliers.
So they survive. Some of these ornamentation of his palace survives.
I bet you they're not there now. But when we were there and I was talking to the commander of the base, he said, our biggest problem is fighting boredom. And there were these huge PlayStation video games set up, and they would be playing war games. These soldiers dressed, well, as soldiers, playing war games.
Fighting boredom.
Yeah. Inside a gorgeous palace.
I'm fascinated, Jake, about this transition from the safety of the base out into hot zones or whatever you would call it. Did you do that with the troops?
I went on multiple missions.
And what's it like psychologically? You're sitting back in your favorite coffee shop, and then 20 minutes later, you're inside of some armored vehicle.
I learned that in a Humvee, do not sit behind the driver in the back seat. And I think sometimes they love to put press back there. So every time you leave a base in a convoy, it's called leaving the wire. And I'm recording the whole time. And what they do is they have to test their weapons. So standing in the middle, I can see the feet of the turret gunner, and he gets to test fire, and they love this moment. Soldiers love this. But what I discovered is that really hot shells rain down on the person in the back seat, which is me. So I'm trying to record this, and all these hot shells, and I'm just sort of jumping around trying to, oh, really funny, guys. And then someone starts taking pot shots with a 9mm right next to me, which is why ear protection, eye protection, and helmets are really necessary just for sitting next to these guys sometimes. And I was finding shells in my camera bag for a couple days after, and in my laundry even.
It must be great entertainment to take your embedded reporter and just scare the heck out of them.
Yeah, but otherwise, I'd be in an MRAP, which is Mine-Resistant Ambush-Proof Vehicle, which they've kind of have to rename because it's neither of those.
Our number at Travel with Rick Steves is 877-333-7425 as we check in with journalist Jake Warga about his work, documenting daily life for the U.S. military stationed overseas. Tom joins us on the line now from Oxnard, California. Tom, thanks for checking in.
Well, thank you very much, Rich. This has been very interesting to listen to Jake's experience. I'm a Navy guy myself, and I was deployed with the Army for a year in Iraq. And many of the experiences that he's describing, I kind of went through the same thing. Being a Navy guy in an Army world, I had to kind of learn their acronyms a little bit and had some of the same similar experiences that he was describing over the last few minutes. So I've been listening and having some good chuckles and remembering some of the fonder things about being over there that were the good things to remember. I mean, I was with the Army Corps of Engineers, and our main headquarters was inside the Green Zone in Baghdad. I was there from June of 2007 through June of 2008, so I was there during the surge. And, our creature comforts were pretty darn good. The Corps of Engineers really did take good care of us over there, you know, when we were living in the facilities.
Well, not to belittle the reality of getting out there and actually fighting, but it's nice that you have a comfortable base to go back and catch your breath. And, hey, Tom, I'm curious about how hot it must be inside those uniforms because, you know, a postman wears short pants on a hot day. You can't do that when you're a soldier. You wear the same uniform regardless of the weather, I would think.
That's correct. I mean, you know, I would go out on missions to construction sites where we were building water treatment plants, sewer plants, roads, bridges, hospitals, what the Corps of Engineers was doing. So, yes, I had my full uniform on, long-sleeve shirt, long-sleeve pants, with my body armor, with my Kevlar helmet. When I would go to less populated places, I would have my M4 rifle with me and my M9 pistol with me, a good amount of ammunition to contribute should I need to contribute. Yeah, it was hot. You get back and, you know, your entire, you know, undergarments are soaked to where you can actually wring them out. And, I mean, I have a picture of just at the base we were at one day, you know, 130 degrees in the middle of the day in Baghdad.
130 degrees dressed up with all that gear. When you get home, what's it like? The first thing you must want to do is shed all that stuff.
Yeah, you do, and you go take a shower. And I always, you know, I was listening to Jake say about, you know, going outside the wire, and I made some pretty good trips out there into construction sites. I would meet with the Minister of Oil, the Minister of Water and Urban Development, the Minister of Health for the hospitals we were building, and actually go into the actual sites where you would be wearing your uniform and your body armor, all that kind of good stuff. I never ever felt worried about getting to where I was going. Coming home was always coming back to the Green Zone was always the dangerous part. And after I get back, I'd always just sit in a corner somewhere and just sort of decompress because that's where I always felt the more danger because they know you're out and they know you have to get back and only get back to a certain couple of places. And that's where the ambushes and the roadside attacks and the IEDs get you.
I never thought about that. But if you were the enemy, I guess that is one predictable place where you could lay an ambush or something. Jake, did you have that notion also?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went many times with route clearance vehicles or patrols that would go out before convoys to make sure that there were no mysterious wires or piles of rubbish by the road, which is as you know, there's a lot of piles of rubbish by the road.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the weight that soldiers carry, they're finally training some of the medics to do chiropractic adjustments. Hmm. And when I was just in Afghanistan, I did a story about what soldiers have to carry around with them, from the physical weight to the emotional weight, and sort of the body armor. I mean, how many, we're talking, what, 40 pounds?
Tom, what did you carry with you when you were going out?
Yeah, my ensemble, my body armor ensemble was about 45 pounds. You know, the mm-hmm. Kevlar helmet is about 8 or 9 pounds on your head.
The battle and, rattle.
Yeah, the battle rattle, yeah. But combat soldiers, you know, they're carrying all that, plus their weapon, you know, 200, 300 rounds of ammunition, you know, in 30 magazine clips, and sometimes with a pack on or a radio. Yeah, the combat troops are toting a lot heavier load than I did going to construction sites.
Yeah, and there's so many pockets on the uniform, Tom. Is there some personal item that you always had with you?
Yeah, I kept three things with me. One was it was a little tiny American flag that I had gotten at a USO in Kuwait. And I always wish I would have kept the little note that was written by a third or fourth year old that says, you know, that said, good luck and I hope you come home soon and safe, that had this little flag next to me, because I would have loved to have contacted that person. And then I was living at the time in New Hampshire at the shipyard in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which was on the border of Maine and New Hampshire. So someone had sent me a Maine flag. Someone sent me a New Hampshire state flag. So I kept those three with me all the time, just to kind of remember me about home. And so those went with me everywhere I went. And I actually have those in a little wall-mounted little shadow box thing of some of the things I brought home from Iraq as a remember, because those are with me every day in Iraq, was those three flags.
Tom, thanks for your service.
All right, thank you very much, Rick, and okay. And thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been embedded in Iraq with Jake Warga. Jake, that must have been a powerful experience. What did you end up taking home?
I took home digital images. I took home digital sounds and recordings, and I took home some mental images, which are more vivid than both of those. I came back with the feeling that I need to see more, that I want to go back, and I want to spend time with the civilian affairs teams, which are soldiers who go out and meet and work with civilians, and I want to spend time with them.
To put that broken country back together.
Yeah, the reconstruction efforts.
Yeah, because that is really the reality right now, is putting that country together and then cementing the peace.
And we are leaving shortly, and we might be leaving very quickly. And I'm just curious, what are we leaving behind?
Yeah.
But there will always be conflict. And as Plato said, only the dead have seen the end of war.
Well, that's a cheery way to finish. Only the dead have seen the end of war. Plato?
Plato.
He's a smart guy.
He's also dead.
He knows what the end of war is.
He knows.
Jake Warga, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your experience from being embedded with our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
There is a name I love to hear.
I'm Staff Sergeant Ike Richardson, HAC-41BSDB, Full Service Sergeant, originally from Eufaula, Alabama.
It soothes my doubts. Yes, it does. And it calms all my fears.
Up next, we explore the heart of southern Spain and Andalusia as our guides from Spain take your calls at 877-333-RICK.